Hello and welcome to Mohawks Meet the Team series, a podcast dedicated to the team behind creating the strategy title, Old World. We'll get to know more about the team and their work on the project. This week we're joined by Tom Whitaker, the senior engineer for Mohawk Games, and we learn about how we went from military simulations to strategy games, and much more. So stay tuned.
Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Glad to have you. And so we wanted to kind of get to know you a little bit and figure out who Tom is outside of Mohawk Games. And I figured I'd start this episode by asking you about where you grew up.
I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and I moved to Maryland after college. I'm an avid runner. I run a lot, maybe 21 marathons. And yeah, that's me, programming and running.
Programming and running. I've ran one marathon and no one ever told me how much you chafe, like everywhere.
Yes, the bloody nipples.
Yes, okay, I was going to say that, but I didn't know. Yeah, that's something no one ever told me. And then I heard you're supposed to put Vaseline like all over your chest to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I just put ketchup on to pretend, but yes.
Nice. And you said you've run 21 marathons?
Yeah, it's a hobby over time kind of thing.
Yeah, I get that. So what's the training like that for? Do you run every day?
I was about five to 6 days a week. Very recently during COVID, for some reason, I've slacked off and now I'm only running 3 days a week.
I think we've all slacked off during COVID. It's an easy excuse, right?
Yeah, I call it the COVID 10. That's the 10 pounds that I gained during COVID.
There you go. So where did you go to school?
Brooklyn and then upstate New York and Binghamton.
Okay, cool. Did you obtain a degree in like computer science or something like that?
Yeah, I got a BS in computer science. I took some master's classes in graphics. And then I applied to a bunch of game companies sort of on a whim when graduating. I mean, game companies weren't really a big thing at the time. And I interviewed at a couple of financial companies down in the city. But I got a job early on at MicroProse Software with an office right across from SID. It was pretty fun. I enjoyed it.
Wait, so the MicroProse right across from Sid Meier?
Yep, back in 92, I think.
That's awesome. So what did you start working on when you went there?
At the time, they were doing Across the Rhine, which was a World War II tank game. But then I mostly got into European Air War, which was a flight sim. I was the lead graphics guy. Mostly at that time, they didn't have graphics cards. So the rendering was all done in software. So you had to write it in assembly language. And I was porting their internal engine from 16-bit assembly to 32-bit assembly. And I thought it was like the best job I've ever had.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. Not many people can say they work for MicroProse. And now they're back, which is crazy. Did you see that?
No, I did not.
Yeah, they've kind of made a resurgence. I guess they've like restarted and now they're based out of Australia, of all things.
That's odd. I didn't know anything about that. I wonder if they just bought the name.
Yeah, I think it's more of the name, but they're really targeting, you know, games like they used to make, like simulation games and strategy games.
Oh, yeah. We made flight sims, strategy games. Obviously, the first Civs were there. Brian Reynolds was there. They were publishing for XCOM at the time, which is awesome. One of my favorite games.
So what other games did you work on during your time there?
I was there for a short period of time. I worked on European Air War and Across the Rhine. I helped out on a few other projects just as a firefighter. And then I went to EA. A small group formed a small studio of the senior staff there. And I was proud that they asked me to come. I was one of the first guys that went with them. And then I worked for EA's Jane's line, which is their flight simulator line. We did two flight sims, Jane's F-15 and Jane's F-18. A really small group of people, maybe 10 people. It was a lot of fun.
I actually wanted to be a pilot when I grew up, so I spent a lot of times with Jane's simulators, including and especially the AH-64 Longbow. I spent so much time with that. Those simulations are amazing.
I met the Longbow team. They helped us out a lot. Andy Hollis was our producer at the time. He worked down at Origin. Yeah, it was a good time.
And how long were you with that team?
I think 6 years, maybe. Six years, I think. I have to look that up. That was a long time ago. But yeah, about 6 years.
And what kind of responsibilities did you have for that?
I was the graphics programmer there. At the time, that was during the transition between software rasterizing. So you didn't have a GPU. You had to do everything on the CPU. And with limited floating points, so it had to be in a special math called fixed point. But at that time, rendition cards and 3DFX cards were coming out. And so I ported the software version of our renderer over to those, which was a lot of fun. It was the early days of graphics cards. I think Quake rendition had just come out. I'm a big fan of Carmack. And we weren't too far behind from that. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, like I said, I have very fond memories of some of those simulation games. I've spent a lot of time in. It's funny, I never actually went on to become a pilot, but I feel like I could probably have flown a longbow. I think so.
At the time, EA had rented or was paying a stunt pilot to fly sort of marketing campaign. So they rebranded his plane with the Jane's logos, and he would do air shows. But he was down in Austin, and they were giving flights. So they flew me down there, and I got to take a flight. And I guess it was an Israeli or fighter jet. And it was the worst experience ever. There's just no fun being in those planes. If you think you have a strong stomach, I guarantee you don't. And the pilot said, here's your parachute. And I said, okay, well, where's yours? He's like, oh, I don't need one. I was like, what? And he took us up in the plane, and he turned the plane upside down. And he's like, okay, you want to take it over to the stick now? And I was like, no, I just want to land. And it was a horrible experience. And of course, they took me out to barbecue before the flight. So they're just the best hazing ever. I enjoyed the experience, but I don't ever want to go in space, and I don't ever want to fly in a fighter jet.
That actually sounds pretty cruel to give you barbecue before they would do that. That's amazing.
Yes. Yes, it was. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I wonder if part of that, too, is that you're not in control of things, right? Like, I'm somebody who gets car sick if I'm not driving, but I'm totally fine if I drive, right? Maybe if you had taken the stick, you would have been fine.
No, that's a good point. It's a very good point. Like roller coaster rides, when you can see the turns coming, you're fine. But if you close your eyes on a roller coaster ride, I'm sure you'd get sick. Because I actually have a pretty good stomach for first-person shooters and stuff like that. But yeah, when you're not in control, it's pretty hard.
Agreed. So where did you go from there?
So Jane stayed together for a while until EA decided flight sims weren't profitable enough market. So then I went back to MicroProse, which then at the time was Atari, I think, or Infogrames. It's sort of confusing which one they were. I think they switched at one point. And we did a dungeon game called Dungeons & Dragons Heroes, which was a blast to work on. Eric Ehoff, our concept artist at Mohawk, or contractor, I guess, he worked on that. And it was just, again, another small group, 5-6 people. And we made a Baldur's Gate clone, which I thoroughly enjoyed. That lasted for about one product cycle. And then Infogrames had financial problems, so they closed down. And then that's when I ended up at Firaxis. And at Firaxis, I worked on Civ 4 and Civ Rev and, you know, helped out on a few other projects here and there. And then I got recruited to go help ZeniMax Online. Actually, I think Mark talked me into it. So it was terrible of him. No, I'm just kidding. I had a great time there, too. And we worked on the Elder Scrolls Online game. And there I was the lead renderer and architect for the client side of the game. And that was a big project. We worked on it for about six and a half years. And then after that, I got recruited to work at Wargaming, where I was a studio director. I liked that for 3 years. I took a lot of management classes and enjoyed it. But when an opportunity came up to work at a small indie company, I decided I'd saved enough and I just wanted to, you know, enjoy working with small teams again. That's pretty much my career.
Well, speaking of ZeniMax and the Elder Scrolls Online, I actually read a recommendation that you'd made for Mark there, and he said that he paid you pretty well for that. How well was what was the going rate for that?
Mark, he's such a comic. No, I did it because I believe we worked. Mark and I have worked together for a while. He actually solved a major problem on Civ 4 graphically, and we had become friends since then. We had some issues with tileable textures and filtering. Not too exciting, but Mark uses awesome Photoshop skills to fix the issue after several artists had tried to fix it. He had gone to ZeniMax fairly early because I think he was a character artist and he kept trying to get me to go there. And I actually liked working at Firaxis a lot and I didn't want to go. But, eventually it was just a good fit and I went.
Yeah, going back to your time with Firaxis, what kind of responsibilities did you have there?
I was the lead graphics programmer on Civ 4, which was the first Civ that had any 3D graphics. So the company, when I got there, didn't have really source control or any 3D products going on, or certainly not a Civ product in 3D. Yeah. So I helped develop their 3D engine, upgraded a little bit of their software development systems.
And I've got to ask because, I mean, among like the 4X community, Civilization IV is considered one of the best 4X games of all time. And I have to ask, like, what was it like to work on a game that ends up becoming so well-regarded?
It's good. I mean, I think I get focused more on the technical issues, so I don't really notice those things. So I have just as much enjoyment on a game that doesn't do as well as a game that does. Obviously, it's rewarding and validating to work on such a big product, but I just enjoyed the time. I didn't really think about how well it did. To me, they're all good. I like them all as they're, you know, each one's an iteration of the next one. I did like that we made the curved world which was when you zoomed out of the map, it sort of like space warped and made the world look more Earth-like. And we continued that on our next project where I worked with Sid on Civ Revolution. So which that was a lot of fun too. That was more of a more casual version of Civ.
Yeah, I remember Revolution. I enjoyed it. It was fun for what it was. And you know, speaking of that curved world, I've always wanted that to come back. And it was there for Civilization IV. It was a great feature. It made everything look really cool. And then it just never came back.
Yeah, I wanted to bring it back on this project for Mohawk. But we agreed pretty much that the scale was too small for curvature. So we haven't done it. But it's a neat technique. It's sort of a gimmick. You sort of warp space. So everything sort of maps into this warp space. But it looks good. And it gives you a sense of like world curvature.
I'd imagine that back then they weren't 100% sure the world was curved. So
some people still aren't.
Yeah, that's true. So it kind of fits with the theme of old worlds.
Yeah.
Well, then, so when you were done with Firaxis, you said you moved on to ZeniMax and with Bethesda. And what was that like? I mean, had you had any previous experience with the Elder Scrolls series before then?
I was a big fan of Oblivion. So I played Oblivion. I had heard of Todd Howard. I had some friends that had worked with Todd Howard. And I was a big fan of the games that he had done. But no, not really. Just Oblivion. That game was MMO. So it was sort of taking Bethesda's ISP and moving into the MMO space, which was a big move then. I think everybody was chasing the World of Warcraft profits. So there were a bunch of initiatives from a bunch of companies at the time trying to make MMOs. But I ended up really, really enjoying the IP team. Bethesda, they just have a lot of creative people and some really strong IP.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually had a friend that worked for ZeniMax at the time. And when you guys initially went gold or, you know, had your physical copy of Elder Scrolls Online come out, he got me a signed copy of it. So I don't know if maybe your signature's on that.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm surprised too that, like you said, everybody's kind of chasing the World of Warcraft formula and Elder Scrolls kind of changed that up a bit. And, you know, at first it didn't seem like it was going to catch on, but it seems to be doing pretty well now.
Yes, it's been generating money for a while. I have no insights. I'm not at the company anymore, but I suspect it's probably one of the most profitable games in the Hunt Valley area just because of how long it's stayed. I think initially the target was to be a paid premium product, but that was more towards the transition when those type of games were going free to play and then relying on either microtransactions or bundles of some kind. And they just hit that sweet spot where the game just skyrocketed. And they also put it on the consoles, which was a big move, and that ended up working out really well for them.
All right, so then you wrap up your time with ZeniMax, and what was next?
I went to Wargaming after that, and I was the studio director there for the Baltimore studio, which was consisted of about 30 or 40 people. So I was there for about 3 years, and we helped port World of Tanks to Xbox and PS5 during that time. And most people don't realize, but World of Tank is this mega international success story. And it's just got a huge fan base. And that was pretty exciting. It was a Russian company. I got to see different insights in the different cultures. We had a lot of cultural training because meetings with different people tend to go different ways. Russians tend to be, and, you know, just generalizing. But Russians tend to be a little bit more direct. We had Japanese people, Japanese teams that were more polite. And Americans who tend to be a little bit more passive sometimes or more cavalier, sort of a contrast there, I guess. But yeah, I enjoyed working there and seeing an international studio.
That sounds like a really good setup for a joke. You know, an American, a Japanese, and a Russian guy start a development studio. Just, you know, I can see how that would be kind of, you know, interesting to deal with.
Definitely. It definitely was. I had not had too much exposure to true Russian culture, and it was really enjoyable. I met a friend there that I've kept in touch with, who's now at Unity. I enjoyed it.
So you actually moved there then for a while?
No, this is the Baltimore studio. So again, still in Maryland. Wargaming has offices all over the world. California, New York, Baltimore, St. Petersburg, Cyprus, Japan, China. So they're pretty international. I mean, we actually had a big world map and there were dots almost on multiple dots on multiple continents, including Australia.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that they were that big. I knew that they were a lot in Europe. I've heard of their Cyprus studio and a lot of the other studios in Europe, but I had no idea they were here. That's crazy.
Yeah. They're a really big company. Most people in the US don't realize who they are unless you're into war sims. Like they have a World of Tanks and totally blanking on at the moment. They're pretty popular. My brother likes this type of games. So he was excited when I was there. I'd always give him my credits or their version of credits, and he would eat that up. So
yeah, I've seen World of Warships. I've seen that a lot. It gets advertised. World of Warships. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can imagine that they're doing really well, because I've seen some of their like conventions and stuff, and there's just a lot of fervor over World of Tanks and their World of games.
Yeah, I think the takeaways from me is that those games become a lifestyle game. So people tend to just stick with the game for a long period of time. I mean, there are people that have been playing for 10 plus years, I'd assume, and they just are not going to stop playing. The key is to keep driving content to them that they enjoy and keeps them engaged. It's pretty eye-opening in terms of markets and how things work. I think there's just a niche for anybody's type of game, and that just fits a niche for a large, not like a massive, it is massive, but you know, a niche, but it's a very strong niche.
Yeah, I wish I had the attention span to stick with one game for that long. I just never have. I've been someone who's migrated from game to game, and I kind of envy people who can stick with a game like that. And, you know, and it's awesome to see that they've created a system really that keeps them coming and keeps them coming back for more.
Yeah, it has a high barrier of entry too. I remember starting at the company and, you know, I said, oh, I'm going to really understand this game. I really want to play. And it took me almost 20 matches to kill another tank. And I had to do that by hiding behind a bigger tank and waiting for their battle to be over. It's just so overwhelming. The tanks, the treads, the targeting. If you haven't been playing, it's really hard to sort of join in, which I think is one of the downsides to those type of games. But, you know, maybe I just didn't put enough effort into it. But I just remember expecting to dominate on my first match, and it took me 20 matches to make a kill. I was like, I am just terrible. And they're like, well, why would you shoot me in the front armor? And I was like, well, where do you want me to shoot you? Like, the left tread, duh. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's something you should have known, Tom. Seriously.
Exactly. I was shamed, tank shamed.
Nice. All right, so then now you stick with them and you were managing 40 people, you said. How was that?
It was good. It was the first time I had true management. I had managed smaller teams of 3 or 4 graphics programmers before, but this is the first time I managed a diverse group of people in terms of QA, programmers, office staff, build engineers, and miscellaneous. It was really enjoyable. Wargaming made the effort of getting people training for those kind of things, so I got to participate in a few training classes in Chicago. I really enjoyed it. I think I have a strong empathy drive, and so I enjoy helping people through their issues. I was really proud that no one had left during my time without at least coming to talk to me about it. And, you know, sometimes I told people, well, if you want to move on, it's great. And sometimes I was able to help people move to a better position, or sometimes I was able to keep people there. But I really enjoyed the time, and the friends I've met there, I've kept in touch with. A few of them I still run marathons with, and a few of them I still watch their cats when they go away. So I really enjoyed that time and the people I met.
That's great to hear. And so then I guess you said you wanted to change your pace a little bit to come to an indie studio with significantly fewer people. And how did that transition go?
So my friend Jason Whitaker was working there at the time. We had worked on Civ 4 together, and there's some other Civ 4 people there, of course, Soren as well. And he had been asking me for a while to go there. And, you know, it's hard to make a transition from, you know, a stable job to go working in a garage, because at the time they were small and they were just in a garage. But it sounded exciting, and working on tanks, you know, more and more and more as a service just didn't seem that appealing. So eventually I went to lunch with Alex Mansaris, and he said, we don't need you. I could do everything, which was clearly a red flag that he did need people to come join the team. And I was glad I did. It was a fun environment, and we fed off each other. It was enjoyable. A small studio, you get to know everybody, form really strong bonds with them. Mark wasn't there at the time. I had asked to get Mark to come there a few times, but there just wasn't a fit until recently. But yeah, I really enjoyed the time.
So I get the impression you were there from kind of the ground up then.
No, Mohawk had already done Offworld, the Mars game, the Mars trading game. They had finished that, and I think they were maybe 6 months or a year into development of what was 10 Crowns at the time, which then became Old World. But yes, it was very, graphically, it was very early on. Jason and Alex had put in some systems for Soren. Some of them needed to be updated to more modern graphics. Like the train was barely passable at the time. There were no clouds and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was pretty early on. They were definitely pre-production at the time.
Gotcha. And so what are your responsibilities with Old World now?
Now I pretty much handle all the graphics, performance issues, which include memory and frame rate. Those are usually always a moving target. As the systems get added or people make changes, we have to track those down constantly. If you look at the Discord channel, people are always having performance issues or memory issues. So we try to stay on top of that. And then adding any new graphics features that we want to add, like cloud shadows or new terrain features. We've added some variations for hills. I work with a contractor named Adam a lot, and he's pretty creative. So we add new coasts in. I think that's it. And then I, you know, also handle a little bit of the infrastructure. I control the Perforce server. I made sure that we eliminated the bus factor. We had a lot of people early on that just knew a system, but nobody had a coverage for those systems. So if that person left or was sick, there was just no way to work on those systems. So I've made a strong effort to include other people into almost all the infrastructure systems, like our build system, which uses Jenkins, or our Perfor server, our backup software. And, you know, we sort of modernized our company. We have a great HR lady, Kat. She's handled a lot of that stuff. And we have like a channel where we talk about any internal issues. So I'm sort of proud of all that because I feel that makes the company more stable. Even for a small indie studio, I think those things are important.
Tom, when you started to say that you worked on the performance stuff, my heart just immediately broke for you because I can only imagine how difficult that is. I mean, like you said, it's a moving target, right? Every time something gets added, there's got to be some sort of performance lockup or performance issue. And man, that's got to be, it's just a constant nag, right?
Yeah, it's usually a team effort. An artist can add an asset that's poorly performing, or their new game system gets in that doesn't perform. We tend to work on pretty beefy development systems, so sometimes it's not noticeable, or sometimes performance issues only appear late in game. We've had a lot of late game issues, but you know, it's a team effort. I'm mostly the one that notices the issues and can either assign out or talk to the right people to help deal with those issues when they arise.
You know, as a long-term Forex player, could you help shed some light on what makes the end game so difficult when it comes to optimizing performance and making it run smoothly?
That's probably, like I said, it's a moving target. So it's probably combinations of everything. Any system generally grows linearly, which is not very good. So if you have 10 units, it's pretty fast. But if you have 100 units, you know, it's 10 times, you know, slower at that point. So we have to be smart algorithmically about how we deal with pathfinding or rendering, these kind of things. Also loading, like if you have 20 sieves all generating requests for something, you know, that's not something that shows up early game, but shows up in a late game. The company tends, or for a while, we were definitely doing multiplayer matches internally where these things would show up, but we've recently been focusing more on the single player. At least that's how I feel it's been going. We haven't spent many times playing multiplayer. There's a Friday multiplayer game. I generally don't go to that, but I usually ask for a save file from the end of the game. And we have a great QA staff, and they usually hand me anything like that. But honestly, it's been random things. Like at one point, our biggest bottleneck in the game was these little unit flags. And it's because the UI system was just hammering our engine. We use Unity for our engine, which is a great engine, especially for a small indie team. But their UI system is not very good. So you have to be sort of technical and have some sort of insight internally of what's going on. And those little flags that we had cost more than the entire game, anything else in the game. So if you turn them off, it was like a 40 frames per second frame rate increase, which was hysterical. And then occasionally an artist will check in the wrong size asset or too complicated and not realize. It sounds weird, but we had like a 70 meg flower in the game. It happens. I just love to give the artist grief. I usually tell Mark it's his fault.
That's a big flower.
Yeah, or it's consuming too much memory.
For sure. And so, I mean, as you guys kind of make your way towards the finished product as it is, like version 1.0 and early access maybe later this, or I'm sorry, the end of early access later this year, does your responsibilities in that regard become more important?
Yeah. Performance and making sure we have a shippable game is important to me. Obviously, Soren deals with the fun factor, the gameplay, those kind of things. But releasing a quality piece of software is a, you know, point of pride for me. And I really take that seriously. Mustafa, who is our lead programmer now, and Alex are just solid engineers. And so, you know, there's a lot of work. getting the last 10%. They say 90% of the work is the last 10% of the product. A lot of the times it just seems to be more about saying no to things or, you know, not adding more features and just spending the time cleaning up what's already there. But, you know, I'm pretty confident on the shipping on the product.
Awesome. That's good to hear. And from what I've heard from the people that I've spoken to so far, it's kind of difficult to make games, but then also play games. But do you find the time? Do you still find the time or enjoyment to play video games outside your job and duties?
I still enjoy playing games. I would probably say I actually have this metrics down where I basically play 4 games a year, 1 AAA game, usually during the holiday break. We usually get a week off between Christmas and New Year's, and I usually play a game. My favorite one in recent times was God of War, but I then generally play a lot of indie titles during regular time, more light games. I played Supergiant's game Hades, which I really like. I really like that studio. I really like the product they make. And the game was just super solid. And I played Into the Breach. That was the other one that I really enjoyed recently. Almost always based on recommendations from friends. There's just so many great games out there. It's hard to play them all. And so I just like to focus on a handful of them and try to enjoy those and not worry about missing the latest, greatest game. I think I would obviously like Redemption, but that's just one game I never picked up. And I love turn-based games. I love turn-based tactic games like XCOM, Mario Rabbids. Those are my real favorite games. I don't play a lot, but I play a few games a year.
From the sound of it, it sounds like you have a Switch then.
I do have a Switch. It's such an enjoyable platform. There's something about not sitting at a desk and playing on a PC after a long workday, or, you know, the TV sometimes taken from other viewing habits, or, you know, just being able to be more mobile with a device. And yeah, that's a great platform. I probably play that and my PlayStation the most for games.
I couldn't agree more. There's something for me, I don't work on a PC, so it's easier for me to play PC games. But between my PC and my Switch, I feel like, you know, there's a huge plethora of fantastic games. But God of War 2, I also played on PlayStation and really enjoyed myself too.
Yeah, I think God of War 3 was the last one, and that was just a phenomenal game. That team deserves every award they got. Just the voice acting, the casting, the camera system was amazing, and the whole presentation. There's a I'm not to spoil the game, but you know, you're the God of War, and eventually you fight these Valkyries, and, you know, they're fairly hard, but there's a final Valkyrie that you have to fight that combines all the other Valkyries. And I raged through my joystick a few times, and I was happy that I eventually beat that game because it was pretty hard. And I'm so looking forward to the DLC for that game.
So are you talking about Ragnarok, the next one that comes up?
Yes, Ragnarok. Yeah. I think they just gave a date for it.
Oh man. Yeah. I'm with you. That's a game that I'm very excited about. And I'm kind of like you too. I've done much in the same way. I choose a couple AAA games every year. And, you know, God of War was one of them for me, and Horizon Zero Dawn was one of them the last year, and I really focus on those. And then, of course, I do a lot of PC gaming too, so it's kind of a similar thing. So I wanted to ask you about the pandemic, and because it's very clear that this has been quite the life-altering event for many people, and I'm just curious to know how it may have affected you.
It's interesting times we live in. Last year's been a change for everybody. Thankfully that we're in a company in an industry where we can work remotely fairly transparently. I think it's more of adjusting, missing my teammates, but we have Slack. So we talk to each other on Slack every day, and we have a standard company meeting on Mondays. So we've been able to chat a little bit. And I certainly enjoyed being home to see my new puppy grow up. I spoil her. I take her out at like 12 o'clock and she throws a Frisbee. And sometimes she comes around 4 o'clock to ask to throw the Frisbee again. So I'll go out and take a short break with her, something you couldn't do traditionally. So there have been some benefits, but I do miss interacting with my teammates and going to lunch. Moose and Alex and I were pretty religiously going to the gym. And I really enjoyed having friends to go to the gym with, and it kept me in shape. And since I'm home, I assumed that I would just have more free time because I wasn't spending it was about an hour commute when we moved, that I'd spend that hour maybe exercising at home or running or doing something at home. But honestly, I just end up working more. It's a little bit hard to handle that transition, and I had to be conscious of it, where the job just never stops. But it's, you know, in the beginning, I enjoyed it. And then slowly I've, you know, time gated myself to make sure I wasn't working too much. And then now I feel very comfortable with it. I think it's actually going to be a transition for a lot of people getting back to an office environment and a strict, strict office hours. So,
yeah, I hate to be the one to tell you this, but surprise, you have to be in the office on Monday. So
exactly.
It will be weird, right? Like, I feel like, you know, at this point, people have gotten so good at doing this remote stuff. So at some levels, I wonder if getting back to an office really is that important. Do you feel like it would be more important, or that it's easier to do your job when you're in an office?
I don't think the work environment will go back to the traditional way, any work environment, especially in the technical industry, where it was before. I assume companies will move to a very liberal work from home policies. I mean, it never made sense for sick people to have to go to work. It just never made sense. And, you know, there's obviously many studies that show that's cost billions of dollars to the American workforce, forcing people to go in as sick. But there's also like family matters, like being able to stay home with a sick kid or going to a doctor's appointment, having some flexibility in your life. I hope that those things we learn from COVID and the ability to work remotely. COVID has forced teams to learn to work remotely, and I think they've adapted pretty well. Like, there's platforms like Slack, Discord, and Zoom, very popular, that I foresee that being even sought after jobs for a while. I think people will look for remote work for a while. In fact, we have a lot of contractors on the project, and a lot of them are remote. And we have someone from Sweden, someone from Australia, we have someone from the UK, we have people from the Midwest, like Nathan. And I've only met Nathan once or twice, but I thoroughly enjoy working with him. He makes me laugh on a daily basis, which is, it's odd because we don't have physical contact, but he is just a very funny person, and things translate sometimes in Slack. I think sometimes people have a little bit of difficulty. It's sort of like the texting thing. Like, what do they mean by that? Or people might take it the wrong way. But I think generally this team is adapted to Slack and understands that everybody has everybody's best interest in heart. So yeah, hopefully it doesn't go back. It'd be very interesting.
I mean, for me, I think the most important part of it would be to figure out how to balance the social aspect of, you know, work and living with also the ability to, you know, like you said, kind of keep yourself safe in some ways. I mean, I think we're pretty fortunate in that the coronavirus occurred in 2020 and not 2010, right? Because I feel like even in 2010, we didn't have the tools that we'd need, like Slack or even, you know, FaceTimes and all these things that we were able to use now to still get work done. So I think in a lot of ways, moving forward, it would make a lot of sense to me to figure out ways that you could still maybe get together on every, you know, you said you had a Monday meeting. Maybe that Monday meeting is in person, and then the rest of the time you guys can just sort of work from home. I don't know what that is. You know, that's a job for Layla.
I agree with you. Even before COVID, though, we had worked in Lutherville, Maryland, and then we had moved to a closer office more towards Soren's, because Soren had a very long commute. And we were working 3 days in the office at the time and 2 days remotely. So we were sort of at that point where we were pretty close to working remote. And so everybody's pretty senior. Everybody knows what their tasks are. You know, Layla and Amanda have done a great job in producing the product, and, you know, it's worked out for us. I do feel bad for industries where people, one, where they don't have any work, where there is a service industry. And I, you know, really my heart goes out for those people, or places where you're forced to go to work and, you know, risk your health and your well-being for a job that unfortunately can't be done remotely. And hopefully those people can get vaccines quickly moving into 2021.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, first and foremost, my heart goes out to the people that just don't have jobs, right? Because some of the jobs industry was just completely decimated. But yeah, for myself, I actually work on the front lines, and as does my wife, and we both got the vaccine. So
that's great.
Yeah, we're excited about that. And if, you know, there's a bit of a weight off your shoulder when that happens. But you know, so it sounds like Mohawk did, I mean, it was a pretty easy transition for Mohawk, since they were already kind of moving towards a mostly remote working environment. And then, you know, you just go straight to a entirely remote working environment. So it sounds like that transition was pretty simple then.
For the most part, I think it did sink in after a while when you didn't have that Monday meeting in person and you missed that physical locality with your coworkers. And like I said, I really strongly miss going to the gym with Moose and Alex. We would actually spend maybe an hour and a half total going to the gym, but we'd spend a lot of that time talking about work, picking up food on the way back, eating that food really quick at our desks and still talking about work. And it was really enjoyable. And I do miss seeing those guys. I don't miss Mark, though, by the way, at all. I'm sort of glad I don't see him.
So I was asked, or I was kind of told to ask you about the Peloton bike. What's that all about?
So when we moved to the new office, which is more of a professional office, we got a gym system at the gym, which included the Peloton bike, which I had never used. They were that was early on in the Peloton rage, and I used it pretty much every night before I'd go home. It was a lot of fun. I do miss the Peloton. I told Layla she could store it at my house, but we had both the Peloton bike and the treadmill, which is sort of an extravagance, but I was super happy that we got it. And also weights. During COVID, if you didn't pay attention and you didn't order stuff early, getting a home gym set up was almost impossible. All that stuff sold out almost immediately. But yeah, the office has a small gym. It's like almost the size of a small office, but it's perfect for us. And I don't know how many people used it too often. I know Stefan used it. I think the Johnsons came in early a few times to use it, but I definitely took advantage of it the most. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate in that I kind of saw things going that way, and I ended up getting a home gym pretty early. So I had a squat rack and, a salt bike and all that stuff. And I was just like, this is it. We're doing this now, because I have a feeling we're not going to be able to do it the rest of the year. And we got it right before it kind of just all sold out. So I feel very fortunate.
Do you think you'll go back to a gym? Did you go to a gym before?
Yeah, I was going to a gym 3 or 4 times a week. I don't think I'll ever go back.
Yeah, I don't know if I will either. I think the only thing I miss is a pool. I like swimming a little bit. But I think I could forego that to just not have the fee of a gym.
Agreed. Yeah. I would love a pool. And I've considered, those they're like almost like treadmills for pools. I mean, they're extremely expensive, but I would love to have one of those.
Yeah. My gym had like massage chairs, which would sort of like wrap you. It was sort of weird because, the last person that went was sort of sweaty and they wiped it down just barely. I can't imagine doing that ever again.
I know, it's so weird to think of life pre-COVID, and now you're just like, oh no, that sounds disgustingly awful.
Yeah, I think my gym requires you to run with a mask now, or the gym I used to go to, and their membership has decreased significantly. I drive by the parking lot every once in a while, and there's just nobody there. I do feel bad for them.
Yeah, unfortunately, another industry that's probably hit really hard. I have a question for you, because you've mentioned that Mohawk Studios has moved. I knew about their location in Timonium, but have they moved from there? Mm-hmm.
We moved just a few months before COVID to an industrial park in Lithicum, which is sort of a midway point for Soren. Soren had been doing a long commute to the Lithicum office for a while. And so the compromise was to move to an industrial park in Lithicum. And yeah, so that's where we moved. And it was more of an office. Previously, we were working out of a sort of a garage studio. Yeah.
So, Tom, circling back to the pandemic, I'm just curious. I mean, you mentioned that you don't want to swim, or actually that you wouldn't do some things that you'd done in the past. But what else do you think you've learned from that? What else do you think you've taken away from the last year?
Honestly, being thankful for my family and the time that COVID has actually given me to be with my family and, my pets, which I love. I actually think it's somewhat of a blessing in a lot of ways. I think there's always a positive spin on things. There's a Chinese proverb that says it's about luck. And this guy just goes through these sequences of terrible, terrible and good luck scenarios. And he always says, good luck, bad luck, what's the difference? But I think there's always like a silver lining in things. And I actually think, COVID has afforded a lot of us the opportunity to spend more time with our families. We cook every day here. I've been pretty strict about not going out. Maybe we've taken carry out a handful of times since March, but we've eaten in multiple times. And my wife cooks a bunch of variety of meals, and we've changed that up a bunch. So that's been very enjoyable. So I'm definitely eating a lot healthier than I ever did. Though I do miss Chipotle. Oh my God.
But always Grubhub or Uber Eats.
Oh yeah. And the worst thing about Mohawk is they give free sodas. That was the worst. I couldn't stop drinking diet sodas, and I have not drank a diet soda since March. So that's great.
In some ways, the pandemic has actually made you healthier. That's great.
Except for the 10 pounds that I've gained.
That's true. So, yes. I mean, if Mohawk or if the industry in general moves more to a remote way of living, do you see yourself relocating, or do you still like the DC metro area?
I like this area. I think if I was a little bit younger and my wife didn't have a career, she'd probably consider moving somewhere international. Would be fun. You know, she always talks about Paris, or, you know, I would like the Caribbean island, something, you know, Portuguese island or something like that. But no, I really enjoy Maryland. My family's in upstate New York, so that's close. And my in-law family is in Frederick, Maryland. So I really do enjoy the area. There's just a lot around here, and I like the seasons. I couldn't move to, I don't know. Yeah, I do think about it, though.
Yeah, I can understand that. So, well, like I said, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel for Old World. What is your responsibilities headed towards that light? And then what do you see yourself doing maybe after Old World?
So moving towards the end, we have a few more graphics features to add that we're working on now. There's a, you know, we maintain a pretty good list of tasks now that we have production, which is good. It's a lot of small studio, indie studios just sort of forgo production and thinking that they can just sort of wing it. And production's been a big help to make sure people are focusing on the right tasks that have the biggest bang for the buck. Because obviously all tasks are important, but some obviously are more important than others. So moving forward, we're going to finish up the game. And then after that, I'm pretty sure I can talk about it. We're going to start targeting Steam. So we'll get our game on Steam. And there is an internal initiative for game 2 that, you know, obviously we're not talking about right now. But yeah, there's a lot of exciting stuff for the company.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd slip up and then release. I don't want you to lose your job, though.
We're actually going to work on Knights of the Old Republic. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, wow. Jeez, that would be mind-blowing for me. That's one of my favorite games.
I only mention that because the internet's going crazy trying to figure out who's working on it. Now that Disney's, yes. But no, we're not working on any big IP. That's not the company where I are.
Yeah,
I assume it'll be a strategy game of some kind.
Well, I was about to say, I feel like Soren is someone who's going to stick with the strategy genre. He's clearly extremely talented with it, and I feel like that's, you know, generally his focus, right?
Yeah, and it's a good niche to be in. It's a niche that people like, enjoy. We have a great fan base. We've hired from our fan base on our private Discord channel, and we've just gotten some amazing programmers. We have a programmer solver who's just a standout, and we've hired a bunch of our QA/modders. From the community, that's actually sort of really enjoyable part of it. Just, I would say that I'm not a hardcore Civ fan. I tend to like more of a lighter game, and this game's definitely on the hardcore level. But I'm always amazed at the fan base and how people enjoy it, and the bugs they can find are ridiculous. So yeah, it's definitely rewarding.
Yeah, especially in a game where there's characters and those characters do some silly things. It's fun to see some of the weird bugs that come from that.
Yeah.
So before I finish up, I was curious, like, if you had a dream game that you could work on, what would you, like, if you just imagined, like, the perfect Tom Whitaker game, what would be that game?
Well, people always ask that, would you want to work on this high-profile game? I actually just like, honestly, I like just working on the problems. The problems could be almost in any game. But if I had my choice, it would probably be some gamification of exercise. I do feel like, you know, like cardio is boring. I run. I fully admit that it's a boring hobby. Like, you know, you run for hours, 5 days a week. It can get boring. But there's the ability to disassociate with that exercise, which is fun. And you see things like Zwift, which is a bicycling product that's very popular among triathletes and runners. And people can bike for hours and enjoy their time on that. And I think that would be very rewarding, both socially for everybody, because I think it would help people out. But yeah, I honestly enjoy working on Old World. It's a lot of fun. It wouldn't matter if it was Old World or a baseball sim or anything. It's, you know, for me, the problems are generally the same problems. So, yeah.
I'll make you this deal. If you can figure out a way to make running fun, I feel like you're onto something. And I'll start running because I haven't ran since I was in the Marine Corps, and I plan never to do so ever again. So if you can find a way to make running fun, you're gonna be my new hero.
Mark says running's the most boring thing ever.
He's not wrong.
I agree.
So Tom, where can we find you? Are you on social media? Are you anywhere that we would be able to, you know, stalk you anywhere?
I am purposely not on social media, and I definitely encourage people to get off Facebook. If it's free, you're the product, so get off of it. I will stalk Twitter and Facebook though once in a while, but no, I have very little social media presence. So you can see me on the homepage of mohawkgames.com.
All right. Well, that's a good way to find you. So very good. Well, Tom, I really appreciate you coming and talking to me. It's been a pleasure to get to know you, and I wish you the best of luck moving forward and what's likely to be some pretty difficult months as you wrap things up with Old World.
Thanks, Rob. It was nice talking to you.